Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Good evening and welcome to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Just one second. God, help me. Okay, everybody. I'm not sure if everyone's hearing me, but I want to say thank you to everyone that's been out there. Just one second. Okay. Welcome, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm sorry, guys, if you're having a little bit of a delay in the mic here. I want to first say thank you to all of you who have been hanging out with us this week. It has been a productive and substantial week. It has been full of important topics. It has been full of great input from some wonderful people. And I certainly would like to know if you guys all felt welcome. If you guys all felt welcome.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. Please forgive the delay. I'm an idiot and knocked my mic out. So I want to begin by some shout-outs and some very special people. Now, I have to let you all know that some of these shout-outs are going out to people because they are going through a hard time, and they don't want to speak on it, but definitely I want to let them know that we are there for you. So, of course, got to shout-out God, our Father, because he's definitely the master of all. And I have to say thank you because this past weekend, my family, brother, sisters, father, mom, has celebrated a late birthday for me and took us to this amazing restaurant right outside of Coney Island in Brooklyn. For those of you who know Coney Island Amusement Park, it's an amazing cultural, long-standing, historical place to be in New York, and it's called Lehman's. It's at 825 Sheriff Avenue. The reason why I'm bringing this up, because all of you know that I'm a supporter of businesses in the area, and if it's a great place, especially with outstanding service, I definitely want to give them a shout-out and a heads-up. So if you are in Brooklyn, New York at any time and you are in the mood to get some good seafood, it's a Turkish place, but everything's wonderful there, and it's called Lehman's, Limans. And I want to shout out that staff. They were amazing from the valet right up, but especially to the three personal service for my family's very large table. That's to Jem, Marat, and Adana. I want to thank you all. As I promised, I will be shouting you out, and I'm also recommending that restaurant to you. To Bobby Bean, that was the guest that was supposed to be here tonight. As I spoke to you guys, be contingent upon whether his health could withstand it or not. This was the man who almost lost his son to a brutal bullying beating in middle school. The incident was 20 years ago, but the harassment and the horrible situations that these people who tried to cover it up are giving him hasn't stopped. But he and his family have suffered PTSD on a level that's beyond belief, which is something I'm going to be adding in for tonight. So in his honor, in his absence, we are going to be speaking on PTSD so that what he's doing in his efforts to try to stop bullying and to get people to understand what PTSD does to a family, which a lot of people understand it based on what they hear. But tonight I want to discuss the fact that it's a very important thing that's being overlooked because it's being misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed, and a lot of people are using it more like a punchline or like a low blow hit whenever they don't understand a person's attitude. So that's going down the line. So let me finish my shout outs. Bobby Bean, this is for you tonight. I'm dedicating the show to you, to your sons, to your family, and I will be making the quote that you asked me to make tonight on your behalf, and I thank you for gracing my panel. He will not be able to continue with his series because between his own health problems at this time and the PTSD of talking about the incident of his son, he's not able to continue. But I do thank him for giving us what he had. To an amazing woman that I've met and you will be having the grace of meeting very, very soon, either this week or early next week, is to an amazing angel from God, in my opinion, named Roberta Bell. She's in Vicksburg, Mississippi. She was a former corrections officer. If I'm not mistaken, she will correct me, Louisiana Transitional Center for Women. And there's a story about her that even on my end of the coast, CBS News in New York, as well as whatever her local station was out there in Mississippi, did a feature on her, which you can find on YouTube, and I would like my listeners to do just that. Learn her, because she will be here to promote something amazing that she's doing after this particular sacrifice was made. But the story was made about Miss Roberta Bell, correction officer in Vicksburg, Mississippi, because she was fired for doing an amazing gesture. One of the inmates was pregnant, only had 2 months left to go to finish out her sentence, and she was going to give birth before her sentence played out. So Miss Bell did not want this baby to go into the system, so she offered to take the baby on for the 2 months that the mother was going to be incarcerated, and was told by her supervisors to come into the office, and they asked her if she planned to take the baby, and she said she would. They told her it was a conflict of interest. They asked her again, I guess a couple of days later, if she was going to still go through with it. She said, if the hospital calls me to come get the baby, I'm coming to get the baby. So they said, well, with that, and we have no choice but to fire you. She had to be out of work for 2 months, but she took care of that baby. She gave that baby a shot. She gave that mom a shot. And in turn, she went to work for another type of occupation. However, she was determined to do God's work in her heart and soul. And she has an amazing project she's in the process of doing. She's opening up a transitional house for these women and other women like her that can get a fresh start when they come out. So that is going to be what our showcase feature is. And she's an amazing person that I believe will grace the presence of my panel, actually, with what we try to do here. So the next step, if you are in pain of any sort, dealing with your bones, dealing with an accident, dealing with just chronic pain, and you are in the Auburndale area of Queens, New York, there is an amazing staff of people all in one little center that you can go to. It is the Auburndale Chiropractor offices. Dr. Mark Snyder is the chiropractor in charge. And Dr. Salvatore Curso, he's the orthopedist. These are two amazing, caring people that they're really good and really gentle. There's also a physical therapy service right in the same office. But the real boss, in my opinion, is the office manager, medical assistant, Adrian. She holds down everything, and this woman, she can do five things in 1 minute while being beautiful with a smile inside and out. So thank you, Adrian, for how you've taken care of my family during this accident. I want to thank Mr. Trooper. He's a barber in South Ozone Park, New York, for Platinum Cuts Barbershop, who also doesn't try to cheat the neighborhood. He's amazing with what he does. He's very friendly and open. He takes everybody on. He tries to be a village to the youngsters, and he definitely did this mom a favor on the fly, short notice, so I have to thank him for that. Kim Milton, an amazing woman who has been part of this On the Edge panel for a while. Things got a little different where we sort of lost track because I got sick and took the hiatus. She had things dealing with her life, but we've reconnected, and she's been supportive even behind the scenes. So I want to thank her for what she does in her neighborhood as well as what she does for me on a professional networking basis as well as a sisterhood. Thank you for that. Terry Banks, he also is a staunch supporter. And, you know, there are things that he does, whether he's on or off in his own community. He's very spiritual, man of God. I appreciate him. Appreciate his input. Very astute, very profound in the things that he does. He has actually helped me along with, you know, getting the networking side of things together. So I want to thank him for that. I want to thank Christina Vera because she's an amazing woman who does, like, God's work without even trying to as an Uber driver. So that's another person. My clan, my kids, amazing in themselves, especially seeing the seeds, I guess, and fruits of my labor in my prayers. I'm seeing it manifest in all of them. And the music you've been hearing here has been to my baby too, my twins, as they formed themselves in a group, Untitled, where they in their music try to give community outreach and positivity, and I'm proud of them for that. To all of you that are out there as my listeners and my family, I say my listener family, who continue to stick around me. Oh, Nathan Huckabee, I've got to tell him thank you too. He brought Bobby Bean to here. And I had the pleasure of speaking with him and hearing how he just wants to be a better human being to people out in this world and wants to make the community better. I know that a lot of times all of you say, well, that's a lot of shout-outs. It is, because each and every one of those people are doing unique things above and beyond without trying to, and they are big differences. It's the small little differences that make big differences in the way the world is going. So I can't not do that for them. This is my little contribution back. So tonight we're going to be speaking on the topic, PTSD is not a punchline, it's a monster. And I say that because everybody, we know more about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, now than we've ever had. Most of the time we've associated simply with veterans that came back from war and, you know, things like that. But there's a whole lot to this. I'm definitely a sufferer of PTSD for two major events that took place in my life, of course, involving my children, as well as something I've gone through myself. As you guys have known, if you've been with me long enough, that there's a segment that was about my personal experience as a teen growing up to into motherhood, and my daughter, who is an activist against human trafficking, because I lost her for 10 days to that when someone kidnapped her off of a bus stop. And she gave me the bravery and the authorization to name her as the child who went through it, and sharing my experience and pain as a third party to that type of trauma, and how all of us go through it. So with that being said, there's a lot to this little beast, and a lot of people don't understand it and can't really understand it, because even the medical professionals are not really getting a grip on it. But what's happening is people are looking at the actions of the beast and not understanding where it's coming from. And listen, not for anything, I understand that, because even me, who understands that PTSD is the reason behind it, some of the ways that it manifests physically is dangerous. So no one is really looking at the fact that someone coming at you with a knife or with a bipolar kind of reaction about to kill you, nobody's going to stop to give a damn about whether or not that's coming from a point of pain. But it is something that society has to understand, that those in charge, it's your responsibility to learn how to recognize it and diagnose it soon, so that the damage that comes from it being untreated and overlooked, you can get a grip on that a little earlier and give both the victims of the victims a chance to get themselves straight, and a victim of the PTSD to get a grip and some treatment that they need help with. That's what this is about at this point. And as you all know, and I want to make a full disclaimer, that nothing we're speaking about tonight is coming from any type of expertise. This is about what we as normal people who deal with it or have been victims of third-party abuse from it feel and experience and needs to get out there. But I'm in no way an expert medically, so I'm not giving anybody any medical advice. The only medical advice I can tell you is to go seek medical advice about this. But this is a viewpoint show. It is a experience and community show. Nothing that I'm saying to you is any professional or medical advice. So I'm not asking anybody to use me as a replacement for going to seek actual professional help. That's what I'm advocating for. And that is a very important situation, because I do need to honor Mr. Bobby Bean by letting you know what his experience was and what he said. What he said was his reasons for feeling PTSD, because first of all, the biggest thing is that a lot of times the people going through it don't know that they're going through it. So he said to please use these words so that people can get at least one type of understanding, okay, as to what PTSD does. And these are his words. I never knew what post-traumatic stress syndrome was until it was dumped in my living room. My son, after a horrific event at a public school, the sheriff's department there and the teachers were carrying my son out and put him in a car, and I knew he was my hot potato. Those are the words that you can use on your show tonight. Then he asked me to all he knew was that he got a call that his son had been in what was supposedly a tussle, boys being boys type situation. What he didn't know when he got the actual call to actually come down to the school was that they never told him that before the call they made him to come see his son, there was a big beating on the bus the whole trip from the time he was picked up at his stoop to the time that they arrived at the school, that a bully on the bus had been beating him, his son, in the head for a good 20 to 30 minutes straight, and then beat him again when he got into the school so that he wouldn't tell about the beating on the bus. And then his father was called, and while his father was on his way to go get there, this bully was given permission to walk his already beaten son around a 90-yard, let's say a 90-yard way to go, when there was a straight path from the locker room straight across the hall. They had this bully be allowed to take his victim around a long way to the nurse's office, beating him the whole way there for the first two beatings. And now after all of that, he's finding out 20 years later that there's a possibility there was a fourth beating that no one told him about, which means there were three beatings out of four that he wasn't informed of until after the fact. His son at 14 had his head beaten in so bad that his brain was bounced around like a football. When he arrived, his son was like overcooked pasta in his hands, just melted and nearly fall. His eyes rolled to the back of his head. He was throwing up nonstop and then had a seizure. And by the time he was told about it and ran his son to the hospital, the boy was in such bad shape that he had to be airlifted to a bigger hospital that had more equipment. And when the nurse originally looked at him with the pen light flashlight in his eyes, she screams at his father, "He's been like this for hours. What took you so long to get him here?" And then when he said, "I just found out from Sebring Middle School about this only 10 minutes before this happened, and it took me whatever time to get here." She goes, "Oh, another one?" So this man was failed by the community, because once he started to try to get to the bottom of it, everyone tried to block him, to shut him up, to harass him. They killed his pets and let his kids see all the dead pets in front of him. I'm saying all this because PTSD was something he didn't even know he was walking into, but he was suffering it the whole way. To this day, 20 years later, his son has grown up, thankfully, has a baby of his own. But to this day, his father cannot hear the phone ring. He has to have his own cell phone on a ringer of vibration, because he can't take a ringer, because that ringer, that sound, triggers remembering that he had to pick up his son in a near deathbed, a boy who suffered a stroke and seizures at 14, because some other 14-year-old's mother and father didn't raise their son correctly and wanted to protect the fact that he was a wrestling champion. That's one. There's a woman that was raped so badly, she couldn't remember start to finish of anything and had to go through several hypnosis sessions just to piece together all of the memories that a beating from her attackers took. And even though she forgot most of it, she remembered the hell and the pain, and then the pieces started coming back, helping her piece together what her mind willfully wanted to forget. My daughter, for 10 days, was missing. An extra 5 days that didn't have to be if racist cops gave a damn about a child who was missing. Tried to go so far as to tell me that am I sure she's missing, because she had just called me, which means technically she's not missing. Where I had to tell them, "Well, I don't know. What freaking dictionary do you read where the word missing means that she called me? What you should be understanding is that that means that she's alive and not where she should be. Because as far as I'm concerned, her address is X, Y, and Z, and she didn't have permission to be anywhere but that address. Not to mention, I had a PINS petition. Now, I don't know what it's called in other states, but in New York, it's called Persons in Need of Supervision Petition. That means anybody 17 and under that's acting in a way that's a deep danger to themselves or others has the right, a parent has the right to petition the extra protection from the court. So in the event that a mother or father thinks their child is missing, they can call the police, have this child picked up and put in custody, not arrested, but put in custody, and they will be transmitted to a temporary psychiatric facility to make sure the child's not trying to hurt themselves or anything while they get to the bottom of why the child is trying to be so self-destructive. So that sort of protects them from being able to be beat up in the street or whatever while we give the child an option to be able to talk about what's going on and the parents an option to figure out if there's something that they can do. That was brought up because, ladies and gentlemen, in New York, a PINS petition for a child is a standing search warrant, meaning if I thought I saw my child go into a pink door in the block down the road, and I could be mistaken, but if that's what I thought I saw and I have an active PINS petition, because this is a minor child in danger, the cops have the permission to go bust down that door, and if they break the door and I made a mistake, oops, oh well. Not that I would want that to happen, don't get me wrong. I'm saying that's the type of power an active PINS warrant had. Now, what these people failed to do when I was telling them that we got confirmation that my child that was missing for 5 days at that time was in this house at this place with this person, apparently something about that house even freaked them out, or they were under some sort of payroll or whatever, because they said, "Are you sure she's missing, ma'am?" And I'm busy going, "Yes, come on, please. I've been waiting. I've been looking." Well, technically, you said she called you, so that was it. So I'm running through the street. I don't have any shoes on. I'm going crazy, and I'm like, "I don't care. Forget you. You're useless," and I'm screaming in everybody's face. "You bring me back my daughter. You give me my daughter. You give me my daughter," and they're cruising behind me. Like, let her do the work, and we won't let them see our faces. But they're cruising behind me, harassing me. Not to mention that they called the first day that I called them to report her missing, they called the suspect on the phone to ask if they have her. 5 days later, I had all the information I needed to get a bigger clue as to where my daughter was, and they tried to stonewall. I had Sprint PCS at the time. It was the first time I ever tried it. And I had a family plan on my then 11, 10-year-old, and 9-year-old children. They're the oldest of the seven I had at the time. And because they were going to different schools and because I had to be in this position to know when to go pick them up or to tell them to call their brothers and sisters to meet each other up, that's why they had cell phones so early, but not without me having a family location service so that I can GPS them as needed. Now, the GPS locator sort of helped me find my daughter a bit, because without that, there wouldn't have been any type of record or extra help. The cops do their job, even though that's not what actually was the ultimate thing that got her back. And even as I'm talking to you, it still shakes me up a little bit, but I'm getting better, because I would have been crying by now and completely. But what happened was I had been calling Sprint on my own from the day she was missing. And I said, "This is Katie Barnett. I really need you to, I gave my password, I gave my PIN. I would like for you to please take a look at your notes, and if you realize it, I've been speaking with other representatives who are aware that my 12-year-old is missing. And I've been trying to get them to check to see if there had been any type of location activity, any new location activity to help me figure out where she may have been. I wanted to know, was there any new activity in the phone so that we could get a grip? And they were very wonderful. I mean, I got to give Sprint PCS. They were like, Ms. Barnett, no, we haven't seen anything since this date at this time, which was the last time that the phone was active. So that went on for all those days, ladies and gentlemen. That went on. And then on the fifth day, after getting all that mess from the cops, no, before that, I got 3 calls from her in a half an hour time from private number. And, you know, I kept her on the phone long enough so that I can monitor the times that she was calling. And then I was sitting there like, oh, God, she's calling me, and I don't know how to find her. And then I prayed, and, you know, I don't care who of you are out there are not believers that are listening. I'm a believer. And I prayed, and 2 minutes later, a thought hit my head. It was like a voice was telling me, hey, Katie, listen, pick up that phone, call Sprint back, and this is what you're going to ask them. And so I picked up the phone, and I called Sprint back, and I said, oh, yeah, this is Katie Barnett again. Listen, my daughter just called me, and I have a question. She called me from a restricted number. Now, it's restricted for me, but is there a way that you guys can identify the number? And so the representative that picked up the phone this time had said, well, Ms. Barnett, I do see that that there's a note here about your missing daughter, and this is what I can say to you. Yes, we can identify the number. However, we can't provide that information to you. But all's not lost. If you guys can produce a policeman that can provide his ID and information and confirm that there's an active missing persons case, we can provide the number for them. So I'm all happy. I already, you know, they said we're going to need your permission to speak with them. I'm like, listen, give me an email or a fax number, anything. So I emailed them right away, written authorization as the primary account holder to release information to the policeman. Now I called this detective who had been giving me I'm sorry, ma'am, I nothing new. So I call him and I'm like, listen, Detective Nolte, you know, we got a break. She called me and, you know, we got information. They said if you call them, they'll give you the identity to the restricted numbers. I'm thinking I am all in, ladies and gentlemen. I'm like, woo, yes, you know, got a break. And then I hear this, that's not true. I don't know what they told you. I don't know who told you that. It's going to take us 2 weeks to get a warrant. It's going to take us another 2 weeks to go through all of the numbers. And then we got to figure out who's what. And so I was so angry and so scared and so messed up. But I'm going to tell you this. I waited for him to finish blowing his hot air, and then the devil came out of me. And I turned around and I said, are you finished blowing this hot smoke up my rear end? I said, listen to me very carefully. You don't need a damn warrant for anything because I'm the primary account holder and I've already faxed my written authorization to release any information that you should need. You don't need 2 weeks to do a darn thing and look through anything because the only 3 calls you should be concerned with are the 3 with the times I'm about to give you. And they already said if you call them with my permission, as you shall get, they can release the information to you. Well, I don't know, but I said, yes, you do know. Call them and then tell me this nonsense later. So the 2 weeks time he claimed would happen really was 10 minutes because he called me 10 minutes after we hung up and gave me the name of a girl I actually knew and knew exactly where she lived. Now it's like, well, we know where it is, but we can't just go in there. Now I'm going crazy. I'm standing on my second floor balcony. I'm looking at the helicopters go. Every time they knock on the door, I'm going crazy, jumping out of my skin. I can't eat. I can't sleep. I've got other kids that don't even know who their mom is because I'm so scared about the lost one. Every time I got a call, every time I got a knock, I'm thinking they're going to tell me that my kid is dead, or they telling me come to the park and go identify a body they found. And it was just all over the place, ladies and gentlemen. I was going through hell there, and I'm looking at my other children, and I'm trying to explain to them. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to comfort you, because I'm a mess, and I feel like I'm going to do it wrong. And all of this is happening because I'm a single mom in this respect. Still nothing happened. Even after I told the cops I knew where she was, even though I showed them, nothing happened. For five more days. She was still there. And it took Steve Wilkos, ladies and gentlemen, the Stalk Show host. My neighbor saw me dissipating. I was losing myself, the strong super mom, and I didn't know how to breathe, let alone think. My older set of kids in the bunch were doing the feeding to their younger siblings, was taking care of the twin newborns that was there, because I couldn't do a thing. But I couldn't, and I couldn't have my other children out of my sight for a minute. And I thank all of you for bearing with me, because this is part of tonight's topic. But on the 10th day, I'm back on this balcony looking at the helicopters and listening to the sirens, who really, I think, was off a horse and pony show. I get this call in my phone, and it's this lady named Lynn, somebody I'd never heard of before. I'd never seen this number. And she goes, hi, this is Lynn from the Steve Wilkos Show. And I was like, lady, let me explain this to you. This is the wrong time for you to be calling me with some prank. She goes, no. Listen, Miss Barnett, hold on, please. Your neighbor Tiffany, she told me what's going on with your daughter, and Steve is really interested. He was trying to get some information so we could see if there's anything we could do to help. So I was like, Tiffany who? And she says, Tiffany Garcia. She's your neighbor downstairs, correct? I know what's going on. Your daughter's missing, right? So now I think God sent somebody something, anything. And so I could breathe a little bit more. I could breathe a little bit, just a little bit. I was able to, like, you know, inhale, and then I was able to let a little bit out. So I'm listening. And she goes, we want to know what happened. Tell us about it. What's going on? And I said, 10 days ago, my daughter was coming back from the movies. She was supposed to, she was under strict instructions that as soon as that movie ended and that I was going to meet her at the bus stop when she came in, and before I could walk around the half arc to the bus stop from my house, the 10 steps from my house to the bus stop, she was kidnapped by a gang and put into trafficking. So anyway, I told them how they called the suspect the first day. They picked up the phone and called the suspect to ask if my 12-year-old daughter, at the time she was 11, was with them. Three times they called. It's almost like code for, I'm warning you, the mother's looking. And then she was like, they called him on the phone? I was like, yes, they did. And I said, and then 5 days ago, she called me, and I gave them the Sprint stuff. And so she asked me about that. Wait a minute. They said, what? 2 weeks for what? And you gave them the Sprint number. And Sprint told them everything. And then I said, yes, 10 minutes after their so-called 2 weeks crap, they gave me the name, Stephanie Vargas. I know who the girl is. I know exactly where she lives. And she goes, and they still didn't go get her? I said, no. She goes, I'm going to call you right back. You hang up right there. Now, she didn't call me back. She didn't call me back. But what did happen was that my doorbell and somebody was knocking so hard on my door, which gave me three times the jumps, because now it's a hard bang this time on the door. I go downstairs, and it's two SVU detectives telling me they're going in. 10 minutes after that, my daughter was produced in handcuffs, drugged up in a car. Then I find out later, thinking that I finally did it, finally helped her. My daughter reveals to me later that those very cops that so-called rescued her tried to rape her while she was in custody. Then there was some speculation that those very cops was under the payroll of the people who took her. So anyway, they found the jerk who looked like a baby who should have just been turned over somebody's knee and spanked. He was 21 years old, and he was a part of a crime family that was recruiting girls right out of their schools. It's been more than 11 years since that happened, and I still am stuck on that roof, even with therapy. And it's everyone telling me she's safe now, and I have to remember that. And, I still cry, as you can hear, because it still hurts and it's still scary. So I say this, people, because now we got to get into tonight. I was inspired to do this not just by Mr. Bobby Bean, but because I was sick and tired of going into the trains or driving and hearing people say stupid things whenever they don't like that somebody got a little cranky and go, "What's the matter with you? You having a PTSD moment or something?" They probably are, and it's a very serious thing. And to find out today in a few articles, when I looked up, is PTSD underdiagnosed in America? And I come up with Psychology Today. That is a very official publication journal of the American Psychological Association, who said that they did this experiment, right, where there were professional researchers and actual professional medical professionals that are the people who treat these mental illnesses. And they did this this survey, this big experiment. One was in South Africa, and then they came to America and repeated it. So in South Africa, they found out that they did a survey on about 40 patients, I believe, in South Africa. And so they had these patients go see like actual psychiatric medical professionals with symptoms and things they were going through. And they found out that when they looked at the collective, results of what medical psychiatric professionals found to be a diagnosis, only 6% of patients were rightfully diagnosed with the PTSD, even though when the researchers went in to go conduct their own survey after these medical professionals, they found out that the medical professionals underdiagnosed that group by 91%. Because they found out that the other percentage of those 40 patients that were not diagnosed with PTSD had PTSD. Then they came into America and repeated the same thing where the medical professionals went in, and then they went in with a group of 44 to 56 patients, okay? Two groups. One was a group of 44. Another one was a group of 56 patients. And in that particular situation, the medical professionals misdiagnosed them again, as 91% of the time they're being misdiagnosed. When they came out with the 2% diagnosis of, it was 2% out of the 44 group, and it was 5% of 56 patients that were diagnosed by the medical professionals. But the researchers went in after them, like the cleanup crew, to do the same study and found out that it was actually 48% of the 44 member group and 45% of the 56 patient group that actually had PTSD. Now, the reason why this is so big and critical is because we're finally getting, like, awareness. We're finally being exposed openly to PTSD. We see PTSD rearing its ugly head more openly and more cognitively. We're saying it. We understand it. It's no longer just the disease or just the illness that went to soldiers that returned from war. Little kids, mothers, rape victims. People are dealing with PTSD all across the board in different forms. The problem is with untreated and undiagnosed in war vets, they're actually killing their families because they think they're on the field and they can't get out of that. With people who have been raped, with people who have been beaten, with mothers like myself that have lost children or lost or had kidnapped kids, because I would not wish the uncertainty and the pain of not knowing whether your child is alive in help. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. And I've had some. I didn't even wish that on the jerk that put her through it. I had other wishes for him. I will say that. I had, God forgive me, I haven't gotten to the point of forgiving him yet, but I had other things I wish that he could experience in jail. But I'm getting better with that one. My daughter's safe. She's in her 20s. She's an activist against human traffickers. She's gotten the assembly and the councilmen to implement harsh penalty laws now for anyone that has been convicted of human trafficking. She goes across the world advocating. She uses spoken poetry to get things out. She's a wonderful rap flow artist, and she's collaborated with her little brothers on a couple of them, which you'll hear somewhere during the segment. And with that, yeah, but you know what? I see the trauma that she still carries. I see how it's affected the way she trusts people. I see how she's very defensive, like, I'll hurt you before you hurt me sometimes. I don't even think she realizes she does it. She's very possessive and super neat, clean about everything in a way that it's more than OCD clean, which I could kind of attribute that, you know, what these traffickers do. I'm sure that she's got her own space, so it's got to be super clean, because I know for a fact that the movies that they show about these traffickers is not far from the way they keep these girls. And one of the problems was I couldn't imagine how to deal with somebody having to service a dozen strangers all day and can't come up with a dollar less than the minimum that their captors demand of them. Or the horror she's seen when one of those girls in her house didn't come up with the $1,000 and came up with $999 and still were beaten or killed. Or that there's a place called Backpage.com on Craigslist that has code names for certain types, ethnicities, age groups for these girls. Because crazy, disgusting, perverted fetish people are out there buying them off. But if this goes untreated, it is the responsibility of these medical clinicians to actually learn how to see whether the symptoms in some of these patients are, because it is hard. PTSD is a beast because it creeps up on you. It creeps up on you and it doesn't give a warning or a unique thing as to what it is until it's already manifested. That is something I can say because as a person that's dealt with it, I didn't even realize I was still stuck on that balcony. I didn't realize I was still going back until every time I saw a picture. Like, I love Law & Order SVU, and for some reason, it's like one of those things where I'm addicted to my own pain because I watch these things and I'm so happy that these girls, you know, and these kids get out. But at the same time, I'm there because I feel like I want to scream at the TV for all those kids that were like my child that went through it. Because I want to be angry and yell at that the person that did it to my daughter, but I'm yelling at these characters that's on TV. Don't worry, I'm not in a state where I don't understand it's TV. I'm just saying the content of the storyline. Or even if I see any child at all that's been hurt. I also lost a son at 3 months old. So, you know, it's one of those things that hits me. And nobody knew how to deal with it. Nobody knew how to tell you that your grief is there, but it's a little bit more than grief when you almost lost a child to that type of thing. It's a little more than grief when somebody you didn't know decided to change your life by beating you over the head to the point where your brain sloshed around. It's a horrible thing to understand that a father went to his son's middle school in a new neighborhood that they thought was going to be the dream of their family, where he lost his family to PTSD because he didn't even know that that's what they were fighting about. PTSD is a beast. It creeps up on you and it keeps you in a room re-watching the same movie of your horror. And the clinicians are hearing it and they're thinking that you're angry and they want to call it some sort of, you know, not dissociative disorder, but they want to call it some sort of syndrome, but they didn't really get down to the bottom of it yet because they don't even understand it yet. Because the symptoms that you have mimic other things that are a little more classic. So you might be getting treated for something they think it is, but it turned out to be something else. And because of that, 91% of the time, there are people with PTSD that are getting so angry and they're so messed up and they're so trapped and they're being judged and they're being misjudged and their people are taking something that horrible and turning it into a punchline or calling them things that it, or treating them like they're pariahs instead of people who are in deep need of help. Soldiers that go leave their families at a call to go to nations they've never heard of or seen beyond a textbook, and that is their life for months on end when they have to watch their friends get blown up or some beautiful little kid that they want to pet that's actually been trained to hold a bomb or something like that, and then when they come back to their hometown, most often than not, they're forgotten about. And their kid is playing around with the ball and it hits the wall a little too hard and they in their head, they're back listening to gunshots. And their wives or their husbands have to wake up and don't know whether or not they're going to get shot next. Come on, America. I have to take a little sponsor break, but I'm opening the floor. I would like to hear from any of you who know someone who's going through it, who have something to say about PTSD not being handled properly. I don't know if I actually can say that I think it's being ignored. I think that they just haven't done, it's a long process, I guess, to figure out. And I guess a lot of these clinicians are overworked and got so many people to see that. I don't think they understand that it's a painstaking process that you have to commit to get to the bottom of it, to really see it before it becomes a damaging issue that now that monster inside of a person that's trapped in it is going to go release that rage or that fear or that confusion on someone else. And I believe that it's these guys' job to figure it out before it gets to full manifestation. Okay, so if you're on the live stream listening and you want to join in, call the phone number 347-327-9967. Press 1 or I won't know you want to talk. I'm going to go to a sponsor break and I'm going to play a little song to give some hope to those out there. And not just hope, just really songs with lyrics that could tell you they understand what you're feeling. By my sons, Untitled. We're from our sponsor. I'm going to compose myself, and I'll be back. And I thank all of you for being out there.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I lost every battle. I didn't win the fight. When it felt like I was at the end, he shone the light. When I couldn't breathe, you were there.
couldn't sleep, you closed my eyes. I lost every battle, but he shone the light.
It's when I couldn't see you were there.
That's true.
To guide me through despair. It's when I needed fixing, you repaired. Supported me in my lows. Never giving up hope. Funded me in my goals and helped me never feel alone. I'm talking family and friends. I'm talking bonds that never end. I'm talking colors when they blend. And the ones that are there when I depend. Not the ones who are there and just pretend.
I lost every battle. I didn't win the fight. When it felt like I was at the end. Here you shine the light. When I couldn't breathe, you were the air. When I couldn't sleep, you closed my eyes. I lost every battle. But he shone the light.
You lended me a hand when I fell to my knees and couldn't stand. When I lost control and almost crashed, you grabbed goodwill and set my path. Taught me to grow from my past, move on from those who wouldn't lie. Take your time and don't move fast. Got a fam who always told me that, and a mom that's always had my back.
I lost every battle. I didn't win the fight. When it felt like I was at the end. Here you shone the light. When I couldn't breathe, you were the air. You close my eyes. I lost every battle. But here you shine the light.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. If you are just joining us, we're speaking on the title tonight, PTSD is not a punchline, it's a monster. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking on the fact that although there's awareness more broadly and more openly in society now about PTSD, I don't think that the knowledge has matched up to the awareness. I think they're saying a whole lot. I think they're offering a whole lot of theoretical treatments, but I don't think that anything is actually stopping the damage from a lot of these PTSD sufferers. I am fortunate enough that I have my faith in God. I've had people around me who believe as well that have been praying, and I have a wonderful pastor in church. I have a great family. I definitely have a wonderful therapist, and you know, I'm able to speak it out. One of the things that all of them taught me is that I have to keep talking about it, because the more I talk about it, the more it's like facing it. And even though I still cry, I have to tell you, I don't have the choked up breathing as much anymore. Still there, but it's not as tight as it used to be, and I don't have the panic breathing. So I'm fortunate enough to have had and still have a ring. And not only that, coming here to my show, to this platform, to hear that other people find that my, I call it my little project. I get told all the time, it's not little, stop saying that, you know, but to me, I'm saying little because I'm not, you know, some paid megastar, but this means a lot to me. And coming here, it's like I'm sharing it with Cyber Family. And I, you know, every now and then you get the knuckleheads that come in and think it's cute to troll, but overall, 30,000 plus of you in areas outside even the United States feel like this place is worth coming to for 2 hours a night when I'm on. Even when I've been out off the air on hiatus for whatever reason, even more than a year. And as soon as the light is back on, you guys are back on the air with me. And it's cherished to me. But big believer that we have to do what we can to change this world as much as possible with what little we can, what little or what a large amount of things we can do. And we can only give our best and our truth. And that's about it. So I actually don't like talking to myself. So if you guys are out there and you have any kind of thoughts on PTSD, do you think, that's my question, do you feel that PTSD is being properly diagnosed? And do you feel that enough is being done to handle it? That is the question. Press 1 if you have an answer. Press 1 if you have something to share and any thoughts on it. That is what I'm looking for. And those of you who are out there listening that know me, I don't like talking to myself. So I enjoy that you're there, but please participate. Okay? Or I'm going to go back to break. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. So there's another situation that I wanted to bring up. Now, I'm trying to get back to my, there's another thing. There's a show. My kids watch it. I still haven't had the, the time, I guess, or the even the understanding to see where I missed out it or whatever. But in this article, they're making a little comparison to an episode in a Netflix series called Stranger Things. There was an episode apparently that said it was called The Upside Down. And so the medical professional who wrote this article from Psychology Today, he said that a good way to try to explain what PTSD is kind of like, this boy went into something that was like his normal world, but it was a darker version of it. And in this darker world, they were like really high familiar buildings, but they were like extremely overgrown, and they had these alien looking vines. But the only thing that the boy had besides himself in this other world was a large alien monster that seemingly kept trying to eat him. And so this clinician is saying that is the equivalent of what PTSD is like. It's a monster that keeps trying to keep you destroyed in that moment of the trauma that caused it. And I honestly can say, reading that, I think that that's something I can honestly say is true. Because for me, even seeing my daughter be alive, grown, and safe, still keep flipping back to that day and what it felt like. And I can really feel it, like I'm sitting there. I can feel my chest tighten up like I was right there that same day all those years ago. This man, Bobby Bean, came to my show last Monday, and it's 20 years later, and he said he hadn't talked about it in so long that it was bringing back him to that day. That's what it does. So for all of you out there that's not understanding what it is and is saying things like, oh, you're having a PTSD moment, that's not a light statement to make. It's like when guys try to say when a woman has a strong opinion, she must be on her monthly or she's having a PMS moment. Even that is not something, if you don't understand it, to understand that that's not a light statement to make. More than just a mental situation, it physically manifests into other things. There are people that with their PTSD issues, their body goes into stress-related or stress-induced health concerns. Because stress is invisible, but stress is a killer. It's an intangible thing that manifests into tangible damage. And there are people who either don't have the patience, the time, the desire, or the understanding to try to get to the bottom of it or understand and be educated. So they turn around and they'll say something to the effect of, oh, yeah, you're having a moment. You're having one of those moments. Yeah, okay. You're freaked out. You must be crazy. You're off. And it's not crazy. It's not crazy. It's a hell. If you don't have a support group around you, you could be trapped with that beast as if it was a physically tangible monster standing with you in the same space. It's like this bad movie that keeps going over and over and over in your head. It's like a nightmare you can't wake up from. And in severe cases, like with the soldiers, there's a lot of them that really, it's like they're really physically standing there. And like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen movies where they show dream sequences and the person is like physically in this dream and they're walking through it like there's like the scene is right there, and then they wake up and the scene disappears and they're just there in the room. A lot of soldiers go through that. I had an uncle before any of this mental illness awareness stuff came out, when it was taboo to say that your family member was mentally, you know, or emotionally disturbed. When that was something you couldn't say out loud, that was a dirty secret, that everybody had that one family member, they would lock up in the back room so society couldn't see them. They wouldn't be treated. They wouldn't be exiled, but they would be kept away in private as if they were a pariah or a leper or some sort of epidemic or pandemic for being hurt or in pain or scared. And that's what this is. And people don't seem to understand that this is something that has to be treated and not suppressed, because all that's going to do is whatever damage comes out of it, it's like you keeping a pressure cooker on a lid and don't give it that moment to, you know, to release the steam. What do you think's going to happen? That top's going to blow. And it's going to be a lot worse. So there's another couple of things that I want to bring up, and I want to, PTSD is actually hitting our younger children as well, because I think that you all that hang with me here know that this is one of my pet peeves, and I say this all the time, and I'm not going to stop saying it because it's actually happening, but society is not the society protective that it was when we were growing up. Where when your parents turned their back, there was somebody in the neighborhood or someone in the government or someone in one of these, you know, official capacities that were like an extra set of eyes or an extra protector to make sure that your children could embrace as much of their innocence as possible for as long as possible. Because we know what happens once they turn 18. They are released and thrown into the harsh pool of reality, and they're on their own. Because even if we parents still go, oh, that's my baby, they still could stay in my house for a little while longer, we know that. No, if they get in trouble when they decide to go out with their friends, they get arrested, they have no protection as a minor that can't be questioned until their parent gets there. That's the time when the cops are like, yeah, lady, whatever, get out of here. Your son's 18, ma'am. Your daughter's 18, ma'am. They don't have that now. So the deal is that they're actually tossed into, you know, full-fledged accessibility to things that are trauma-inducing. But they're not given any type of experience or strategy or preparation to deal with it. So what happens is we're dealing with kids that are exposed to sex, sexual things, birth control, pregnancy, images on TV, hypersexuality, things so early on. We're telling these kids, you're supposed to look like this. And nowadays, when these kids are going through things that growing pains brings, they're not allowed to experience growing pains or the resolution of growing pains, because instead of guidance counselors, they're being assessed. When they go in to speak to a guidance counselor because they were a little sad at school, the guidance counselor is not acting like I was used to do. Well, why do you feel that way? Oh, come on. Do you really think that those people out there are going to be around and really know what's going on? Look at yourself. You're beautiful. Look at yourself. You're really handsome. And believe me, you haven't grown up yet. So, you know, your muscles will come in. Believe me, you haven't grown up yet. You know, Tina, your breasts will come in soon. And when before you know it, you'll look back on this and you'll laugh one day. That's not what the guidance counselors are saying now. They're saying you're sad. Well, when you're sad, how down do you feel? When you're sad, do you feel like you want to go kill yourself? Okay, hold on a minute. Let me get my notebook and my pen. That's called depression. We need to go figure out what drug goes with this. So wait a minute. So when you're angry, do you feel angry 1 minute and then you feel okay the next minute and then you feel, okay, that sounds like bipolarity. So I think they're bipolar. Let's go find a drug for bipolar. Wait a minute. You're feeling happy? You want to jump up and down and go scream? Oh, you know what? That's called ADD. It's not called having fun as a kid anymore. Everything has to be assessed, labeled, and categorized. These children don't have anything anymore. Except adults who are too tired to do their damn job and they're telling their kids, hey, go have fun. Listen, you calling out sick today? Go to the office so we can call your mother. While you're standing there to sign out, look to the left and go pick any color condom you like out of the candy bowl. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. You're 14, go have sex and go get the birth control. We don't got to tell your parents. Don't say anything about, oh, wait a minute. What happened? The condom broke and you're pregnant? Okay, go get an abortion. We don't got to tell your parents. Oh, wait a minute. The abortion went bad and you got an infection? Oh, well, you got to go get your parent before we could treat you. Okay, bye. And when this happens and this child, too scared to tell their parents because nobody is telling these teens, your mother might be angry for a minute, but at the end of the day, she's going to have your back. So kids are running around going, I shouldn't have did that. My mother told me that she's going to kill me. And then society is going, you think your mother's going to kill you? Well, ACS will be right there to save the day. And now these kids are dealing with a pregnancy that they weren't expecting, don't know how to deal with, can't talk to their parents because now ACS done swung in because a kid who said something a normal kid at that age would say, I think my parents are going to kill me. Now they're under some foster care court system because they couldn't get to the end of the road where they found out. Yes, of course. Your parents are a little upset, disappointed, and angry because you're 14 and you're pregnant and you're 14 and about to be a father. And we want better for you. And we're crying because we know something you don't know about what that's going to entail. You're not going to be able to go to school as quickly or as much because you're going to have another human being that's going to be crying every 2 hours, that's going to be telling you things in crying only, and you're not going to understand what they say until you figure out your niche as a parent. And you're a child yourself. So now this child's got to deal with a pregnancy they don't know about, an abortion they didn't know there's a possible side effect to, the fact that it's a child that some pro-lifer just showed them a brochure with a crushed fetus in a petri dish and said, this is what you just did to your kid. And they're only 14. They don't know anything. So now they have PTSD from that because somebody just told them they murdered their baby. Because society said it was okay to have sex and go have a condom and don't worry about what your parents are going to say. Now they're in a a cafeteria bathroom or a bathroom in a school somewhere with a hanger trying to get rid of the kid, put him in a trash bag somewhere, and that's the way they got rid of it, and nobody knew they were pregnant, right? And because nobody said anything, this kid is dealing with that trauma. And what do you think is going to happen when they get older and it's been unaddressed? But somebody wants to make a joke. PTSD, yeah, it must be a PTSD moment. You damn real it is. And it won't be so funny if that person who never got the help they needed turns around and stabs you in the neck because, you know, they heard you say something that triggered the moment that made them feel this way. And now they have to deal with the punishment of the crime because they didn't figure it out. And they still did something wrong even though they don't understand what they did wrong. And now the world wants to make them the person to throw darts at. We're down to our last quarter of this segment. I do have to pay my sponsors. I will be back. Press 1 if you want to speak. 347-327-9967. That's the number to call. If you want to speak to me, you can't do it from the live stream. And if you're on the panel, you have to press 1. Okay, I'm looking forward to hearing from you. I'll be back in 3.5 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Thank you guys for hanging out with me, and we're back. So, if you're just joining us, tonight's episode is called PTSD is Not a Punchline, It's a Monster. For those of you who are not here, I've shared my experience with PTSD. I've shared the experience of PTSD from our former guest, Mr. Bobby Bean. Those of you that have looked at his YouTube documentary interview knows what he went through. You've heard it here live. He's got it so bad that he can't even keep a ringer, like an actual melodic ringer on his phone. He has to only deal with vibration 20 years after the fact. I had a child that was kidnapped 11 and so years ago, and I still am living in that day, even though my support group sort of keeps me out. Every now and then I'll have a moment. It'll come out. I lost a child at 3 months old. That still stays with me. That's been over 30 years ago. That's an issue. We have, these are things that as much as you've moved forward physically, as much as time has elapsed, sometimes when people say time heals all things, Time heals all things when you've had a proper, positive, and constructive way to deal with it and process it. But if you've just gone through this tragedy and you're just going through it and time is passing you by, but it's gone unaddressed, it's not anything that's a prize to deal with. It's just you carrying a monster that it's going a little further back in time, but it's still just as heavy a burden on you, on your mind, on your feelings, on the way that you operate. My incident has me extremely protective of children, especially my own. My incident keeps me angrier than ever that somebody can hurt children. A baby getting hurt or dying at the hands of an abusive parent makes me really sad and extra angry. The only difference between what I'm going through and what I'm speaking about in these news articles is that I've had a very strong force to explain, to help me understand and my rage or express my sadness through constructive things like this. So it makes me more of a stronger advocate and a bigger mouth, in a sense, against these monsters in places where it will make a difference. That's the one thing I can honestly say I think keeps me straight on the right side of the line is this. If I was to go hurt this person that hurt my child, I would be in jail and my daughter would lose me. And he would win. If I took my anger and used my creativity and used my bravery and definitely my strong mouth here to go to the right places, to the administrative places, to the legislative places, to the judicial system, to the media, to anybody that can make the right difference and stand up and be willing to do my part to make it happen. Understanding change isn't easy. I can definitely say I'm doing the right thing or I'm doing something for the person that was victimized and I'm doing something, I'm taking a step further away from the monster in my head or the monster. Matter of fact, that's a perfect way to put it. The monster in my head. It is not something that medical clinicians have the right or the affordability to not be very adamant in continuing to figure it out, in continuing to, if whatever study subjects you have to do to figure it out, to see it for yourself, to make comparisons, to do everything you have to do to come up with a conducive, constructive, and effective plan to catch it before it becomes something bigger. And it is a loved one's third party obligation to do the same. Just because they're clinicians don't mean they're perfect or they can't learn something. You know your loved one more than anybody. You know when something goes to the left, especially if it's your child, especially if it's your husband or your wife, especially if it's your mom or your dad, if you're close to them. You know when something is off. If you can, study what they do. Write down things. Write down things that are different. Write down things that are different. Ask them about what they're feeling. Listen to what they say. And if it doesn't sound like it matches what they're going through, then you take the steps you need. If they're seeing a therapist, if they're seeing a psychiatrist, if they're seeing a doctor, make sure you can tell the doctor what you know to be different about them. Because sometimes they're so in so much pain, they may not even realize that they're still releasing something off on person that caused the event. One thing that Bobby Bean said in his book, as well as here on the panel, is he didn't even realize what it was. All he knew was that his family was angry and sad and growing apart more and more without anybody knowing why. They weren't blaming each other. They just didn't know how to come together and battle what the real monster was. So as a result, the only place that they could place their anger and place their fears and place their confusion and get any comfort out of it was in being angry with the people that were safe to them. If they were angry with the people that caused the pain and all that stuff was happening, they could get killed. And those people wouldn't care anyway. They obviously didn't. To still try to hurt the man 20 years later. So subconsciously, we're angry with our loved ones because we know that no matter how angry we get with them, they'll be there for us. So it's easier to lash out at a loved one than it is to lash out at the person that did it. Because that's the way you subconsciously feel that you're in control, even though severe cases of PTSD, you don't have control. And I think a lot of soldiers' wives and families didn't have to suffer some of the fates that they did if people just paid attention. If in the beginning when they came home from war, that before they were sent out there, that they already have professionals in place. And that is something with regard to the military, the soldiers who deal with it in the military. That's something that has always bothered me. You know, war is a whole different beast in itself. There are things that happen in war and the things you have to do and the family you have to adopt as family, the abnormalcy that you have to adopt and understand as part of your routine as a soldier, that the people who send you out there should have extensive backup plans for you when you get back. Half of the time, soldiers are forgotten about when they get there. And when they make such a big mess that they don't know how to deal with it, it's like, oh, well, they're on their own. And I feel that that shouldn't be. As much as I don't believe in war, I do understand that every country has to have some sort of defense. So I the same way I'm not a person that believes in abortion, I can't say that I would vote against it. Because I would rather a child not get here and let them have their personal journey with God on that one rather than see a kid get cut up and be put in a trash bag somewhere because the mother didn't want them because of a rape or because they were too scared to know what to do about it. I would rather they don't get here. Of course, safely. Not if you already, you decided to do that at 6 months. That's ridiculous. But like I said, my personal belief can't be that. But as far as soldiers in war, I thank the men and women of service for their service all the time. I have a son and a nephew that were soldiers. And I thank them for their service every single day. I was one day away from being in the 9/11 attacks because I worked at the World Trade Center, and I quit cursing my boss out the day before and wasn't there. But I saw what happened when men and women of the service and the police departments and the fire departments and the medical departments had to deal with on that site and what must have happened. I was having PTSD watching it on the air, as I'm sure everybody in America did that day. And some people who were in power that could have done something about helping along were too busy trying to grab the opportunity to get in office. Mayor Bloomberg, right at the height of everybody screaming at the blood and watching people jump off buildings. Because they'd rather jump to their death than burn up. And America on a whole is one big post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm sorry, I have a couple of Oh, Rhonda from Virginia, yes. Yes, I believe as well. She says that PTSD has long been misdiagnosed, confused, and oftentimes people are, let me hold on, my glasses are shifting to the left. Oftentimes people are judgmental, oh, you're right, absolutely, are oftentimes judgmental of the adverse actions, okay, the adverse actions of a person suffering with this disorder. It is a sad situation where people in a country that is supposed to be open and liberal and advanced can't get the help they need, especially when they are being the ones sent out there to be exposed to this in the first place. I 150,000% agree. I think that the resources that we spend on things that make absolutely no sense should be spent on trying to improve the home country that we are in right now, because there are people going out there to those other countries and coming back with pain that nobody should have to deal with alone or even have been exposed to. Can you try to imagine what it's like to have to get up on a whim? Because once you enlist, you are no longer your own person. And once you get out there, you have a certain way that you have to eat, certain way you have to walk, a certain way that you have to take certain things before you can even fill your hunger. Because you know what? The experience superiors of the military understand that, you know, certain things that look like as good food is something that can kill you later. Certain shots you have to take because you're exposed to some exotic diseases. But you're doing it because they told you you're being a patriot for your country, that you're doing it so that people like us can enjoy the liberties of being able to walk free and feel safe. And then you have a code that you have to abide by that nobody can understand but the people in it. And you have to leave your family and miss your baby's birth and, you know, all these things because you are watching people build weapons out of things that you don't even know could be a weapon. And you're doing this because it's your duty. And you know something? You've seen things no one could see. And even if you saw it on one of those Hollywood movies, it still wouldn't touch the surface. You had a friend that you came in to rookie training in that didn't make it out of training camp. And when you came in because some very well-crafted marketing commercial told you that you were going to be all you can be. Help them find their way. I can't imagine. There's things that they have to do every day that we couldn't even imagine doing if it was better than that. Unimaginable. For someone whose lives got changed by a stranger they never met, who did unspeakable things to them. For children to be trafficked and have to be subjected to the most lousiest, disgusting people that there are out there. And for some of them to even be the so-called protectors in law enforcement that joined the force. And when the mess is over, their loved ones don't even recognize who they are anymore. So, ladies and gentlemen, there's actually an emergency that just came up here, so I'm going to have to shut the show down 24 minutes early. I want to thank every single one of you that has been here, all of you that's listening on the live stream. Thank you all so much. Rhonda, thank you for that comment because you're absolutely correct in Virginia. And all of you that I mentioned in my shout-outs, Ms. Roberta Bell, thank you. Bobby Bean, thank you. We're still fighting for you and praying for you. And on Wednesday night, it'll be a new show at the same time. I want everybody to go out there and be a blessing to someone. Something small may go a long way. Until Wednesday night, everybody be blessed, be a blessing. make a difference, and I will see you back here, hopefully, God willing, and hopefully you find it a great place to be, 10 p.m. on Wednesday night. And if I don't see you guys after that, have a wonderful, wonderful holiday, okay? Thank you all. Good night, and God bless.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.